Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much, Master Khos, for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. This time on this particular day in history, 1987, George Michael gave us his debut album titled Faith. That's going to be the only fact that we've got today because we had the midterm budget policy statement for the day today and we're going to be reflecting on that. I want to get as many reflections in as we possibly can. And in order for us to do that, we're going to go straight into it. We're going to be speaking to the market watcher of the day today, usual suspects for a Wednesday, that's Sasfin Wealth's David Shapiro, on how the markets have been reacting and how the markets have performed throughout the day. Good evening, Uncle David. Lovely to speak to you. Did you catch the budget speech?
I did. I read it in detail, but I'm afraid I don't know how you're going to make a whole program out of it. Not much. I just look for, you know, Jimmy, I'm a revenue man because even when I look at accounts, I like to look what's coming in, what cash is coming in. Because once cash comes in and the big cash, then you can do with it what you want. You know, it's when it's not coming in. And sadly, revenue is under a little bit of pressure. And we're going to, not by a huge amount, but we're going to, even for the budget, which ends in 25, you know, going to be lower than expectations. And also, I think the other thing, you know, on the growth side, that also worries me a lot, you know, that they've downgraded growth to 1.1%. We need much greater growth. So you're going to have a lot more experts on it, but also the budget deficit not coming down as much as we thought with the developments that we've had over the last few months. So market, you know, there wasn't a huge reaction here. The rand weakened slightly and bond yields kicked up very slightly as well, which I think was an initial reaction that you would have expected, but probably settle down as time goes by on that. But overall, it's been Jimmy, it's been one of those days where we've had the English budget. There's a lot of results coming out of the US. We've got so much happening there, their growth stories and that. So you've got to put it all together. Very eventful day.
It certainly has been an eventful day. And when I look at some of the reactions and I look at some of the market movements, we didn't have such a good day on the equities side of it, but it looks as though that's tracking kind of what's been happening around the world as well. I think European markets were in the red, Asian markets were in the red, so we weren't really surprised when our markets were in the red. But I did take some solace in knowing that financial stocks were up almost 0.75%.
Yeah, they're steady. I'm not quite sure they were, you know, what, why they're different from the other markets. Look, Europe was ugly and European growth is ugly. You know, it's, the forecasts there are downward for, you know, for 2025, 0.7%. And I think that's why European markets come. And of course that translates, and the UK budget as well. If you look at the UK budget, so why I bring up those two, because it does affect many of the stocks quoted on the JSE, the big numbers, you know, that's where you say, you know, that's why AB InBev, Richemont, you know, even Process and Iceberg because of China, British American Tobacco, all of those, Mondi's and so on. So a lot of those came down because of that, because of what we're seeing in Europe and in the UK. From our point of view, you know, from the local point of view, there's nothing that's, you know, there's nothing that's really worrying. It wasn't a bad day. It was like, I know we're coming to the end of October, but it was a 26 billion rand day today, dominated, as you say, by financials, First Rand, Standard Bank, Capitec were the big traders. So there's interest in that. Whether this is on the basis that rates are going to start coming down and we're expecting a little more activity here, I'm not quite sure. I'm still trying to work that out in my head, which is a bit confused at the moment.
Uncle David, when we look forward to just kind of the rest of the week and what's coming out, we're still in the middle of US earnings seasons. Yeah. Our midterm and all other data points are seemingly going to get even quieter as we look towards next week. I know you and I are going to catch up next week, Wednesday, after the event, but between now and then, we might be in for a new president of the United States. And that could be something that moves the markets for the rest of the year.
There will be a knee-jerk reaction. you know, the bets are, if it's Trump, that it's going to favor market because of rate cuts. I mean, because of tax cuts. The other side of it is a worry, the fact that he's going to increase tariffs. That will play through. I think to a large extent, it's already in the market. I think it's going to be a surprise if Kamala wins. You know, the markets are betting on Trump. So to an extent, that's largely in the market. But we've got a lot of corporate results coming through. And some of them are different. You know, some of them, it's been quite patchy. But, the you know, Alphabet's results were very, very good and points towards maybe some, you know, better numbers out of the tech companies. At the moment, they seem to be dominating. We've got, we had Alphabet, we've got Meta, we've got Microsoft, and then I think Amazon on Friday. So, or, you know, those, somewhere around that. But they're very, very important. But Jimmy, you can't, you know, you don't know what's going to come out of it. That's why I think you know, it's very hard to take any kind of bet on markets. Who knows whether Kamala can do it? I've just been speaking to someone now who believes, don't worry, the youngsters are going to vote for her. You know, they're not in the polls. I don't know. I've just got a few. But you know why I'm more worried about Trump is that for Africa, he's not good. He's not good for us. You know, his whole attitude towards Africa and towards, you know, for his attitudes to China and to the Asian countries and that, and his whole policies of, you know, increasing tariffs and bringing jobs back to America and manufacturing back, it's going to put us in a difficult position.
Speaking of difficult positions, Uncle David, before I let you go, your final thoughts on the budget speech. Did it deliver?
No, I don't think so. I think slightly on the negative side.
Okay.
I think we were expecting a little bit more, you know, in terms of maybe revenue, but it's certainly in terms of the budget deficit coming down. And also, I think concerns that we might have to, borrowings might go up in the short term. So I think that was a concern. I think maybe we expected too much, Jimmy. You know what I mean? That's what we are in the markets. We're always on the optimistic side.
Well, hopefully we will get some optimism at the end of it. I think we'll leave it at that, Uncle David. Thanks so much for the time and for the insights. It's David Shapiro of Sasfin Wealth sharing his thoughts on the midterm budget policy statement that was tabled today, as well as some of the other market movements that would have kept us busy throughout the day.
There's a song that goes, money can't buy me love. And that's true. But then they told us all you need is love, which anybody with a mortgage will tell you. Most certainly is not true. Love won't pay your parking tickets or your student loan. It's also needy. It requires effort, availability, constant care. But more importantly, love requires time. And while money can't buy you love, it can certainly free up some of your time. Time to spend on the things you love with the people you love. And if you're looking, maybe even time to find the one you love. That's why, after 50 years of investing, we've learned that time is the greatest gift of all. And the good news is, if you invest early, time gives you money. And then money gives you more time to do the things you love. And don't you love that about investing? Ellen Gray, long-term investing. Ellen Gray is an authorized FSP.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Now, while the midterm budget policy statement may not have delivered on expectations and might have left us feeling somewhat disappointed, we're still going to nevertheless try to get as many reactions for that speech that was tabled this afternoon or delivered this afternoon by the finance minister. I'm joined in studio by the director and head of tax advisory services at SNG Grant Thornton, Kanyisa Klingongandu. She's going to be joining me throughout the show to react to just what's been happening throughout the day and share some of her thoughts and expectations. But before we get to that, before she joins me and shares her thoughts, we had our editor at MoneyWeb, Arek Vanika, catch up with the Minister of Finance himself, Enoch Godongwana, earlier this afternoon around that midterm budget policy statement. And I think that's a good starting point for our conversation to just get a sense of what the minister thought of what the minister had to say.
On the line is Enoch Godongwana. He is the Minister of Finance. Enoch, thank you so much for your time tonight. You spent a lot of time in your speech focusing on initiatives to grow the economy. You highlighted four pillars, but yet in the documentation and the forecasts, it seems as if economic growth will remain pedestrian over the next few years, between 1% and 2%. And of course, we need a lot more aggressive growth to address the social issues we have in the country.
But we also say, if these reforms we are announcing become effective, we expect an additional 2% growth over and above. That's why we're pushing these structural reforms and the investment in infrastructure. We think all of that will add to this, what you call pedestrian growth.
You spend a lot of time on structural reforms. You focused on infrastructure again, increasing the efficiencies of the state, especially at local government level. Are there any low-hanging fruits you think could, you know, result in that accelerated growth you just referred to?
Well, on the infrastructure side, let me first raise the principle which you were making, that we're beginning to shift expenditure from consumption to capital investment. And that's a broad approach we're taking. Immediately, there are projects we're talking about on water, on roads, and in general, and through the budget facility for infrastructure, a lot of projects we're announcing there, which we think if they take us from the private sector, they will stimulate growth.
The focus is on new infrastructure projects. I think that is pretty clear, and the country and the economy desperately need it. But we also have a big problem with the maintenance of existing infrastructure. Is that a priority?
It is also one of the priorities. We make to reference to that this transformation we're doing in the infrastructure space is to make sure that there's proper preparation, proper planning, proper execution. Part of proper planning is to make sure that there's proper planning even for maintenance, which at the moment is very weak.
Yeah, I think that's going to be an issue, especially in Johannesburg, where, you know, not the big infrastructure projects we need. It's just maintaining and improving what we have. I think that will make a big difference. Just a few other issues. The National Health Insurance, NHI. I only saw one referral to the NHI in the budget document. And no allocation was made specifically for this initiative, and that, you know, is over the medium-term period, 3 years. Why wasn't there a specific allocation made for the NHI?
You will recall that we currently have an NHI grant which is focusing on certain pilot projects the Department of Health is working on. That allocation stands is over the medium term. But in addition to that, in February, we listed a couple of issues we need to focus on in order to roll out the infrastructure. That stands. So we have not made any new announcement because we're not making any additional issue in terms of the strategy for NHI.
The budget suggests we'll see a significant primary budget surplus over the next few years, and that is absolutely fantastic news. And that means that the government expenditure is less than the revenue, the tax collection from SARS. But still, when you look at the net number, there's still a significant interest payment. 1 rand out of every 5 rand SARS collects is used to pay interest. And unfortunately, the fiscal performance of South Africa is not turning around as quickly as even you have expected or forecasted a year or two ago. What is your perception now of our fiscal position? How far or how much room do we still have to be able to proactively reduce the negative impact it will have?
Okay, let me start with debt service costs. Debt service costs are a function of the total stock of debt. As we have indicated now, this total stock of debt is rising to 6 trillion rand, which is 75% of GDP. That is high. But what makes it difficult is growth. Now, for as long as we've got our growth levels are very low for over a decade, and that is making it difficult to deal with the fiscal position effectively until we deal with the growth challenge effectively. That's why in the budget we are beginning to say we've got to shift the focus on growth areas, include structural reforms, making the state efficient, the state capacity, investing more in capital investment. All of those things are shifting towards the growth story.
Then I'm sure you're not happy that SARS will not collect its target or meet its target for revenue collection. It will be around 31 billion rand short over the next 2 years. How unhappy are you, and will it lead to higher taxes next year?
Unfortunately, I don't talk about taxes in October. I only talk about taxes on one day in a year. That is when I table the budget. So I can't answer the tax issue. However, I can record that revenue shortfall is quite a disappointment. It's going to have serious implications for the budget.
Yeah, serious implications indeed. But is there any way to mitigate that in some way? Will it lead to maybe expenditure cuts in some departments?
I mean, we're already mitigating that through moderating expenditure. I mean, we are sticking to the baseline. Any revenue increase, we're not funding new projects.
That was the voice of the Finance Minister, Enoch Godongwana, chatting to our editor at MoneyWeb, Rake van Niekerk, a little earlier on today around the midterm budget policy statement that was delivered this afternoon. As I said earlier, I'm joined in studio by the Director and Head of Tax Advisory Services at SNG Grant Thornton, Kanyisa Ngcingo Ngandu, to just share her thoughts and reflections around some of the conversations that have been taking place throughout the day. Good evening, Kanyisa. Thanks so much for coming through. Thanks for joining me in studio. Your initial thoughts on the budget and perhaps on what the minister touched on here around the fact that we could have serious implications come budget 2025.
Good evening. Thank you for having me. So, I think, I hope by serious implications, the minister meant that looking at revising the overall expenditure, not necessarily looking at introducing new additional taxes. My initial reaction from the budget, I think it was what I've expected. It's the same as what it has been throughout the years, and he is right. Usually during this time, he does not necessarily talk new tax proposals. What, from a tax policy perspective, this time around, he has tabled what was proposed last year. And some of the new measures that the government put forward, which were intended to generate additional revenue, like the introduction of the minimum global tax. So next year, then, if the bill is passed, then next year we should see that being implemented, potentially additional revenues, but certainly not enough to cover for the shortfall.
We're going to come back to that shortfall, yeah, because that is a serious concern, and we even had to speak to the South African Revenue Services about that potential shortfall and what its implications are. But for right now, I want to get the thoughts of the chief economist at Citadel Investment Services, Martin Ackerman. He joins us now on the line to share some of his budget reflections. Good evening, Mr. Ackerman. Thanks so much for taking the time. Very kind of muted budget, some would say. What are your initial thoughts and reflections on the budget?
Yes, I think a little bit of cold water after all the optimism earlier this year when the Government of National Unity was announced. But also maybe the right move not to take that optimism right into the budget, because that will give us a false picture. So I think the minister was very prudent to actually say, well, the reality is that we can be very positive on developments we've seen so far. If you just think about where the rand is versus where it was before the election. But on the ground, that's not what we're seeing in the real economy. So, you know, adjusting the current growth numbers even lower and not seeing very much higher growth for the next 3 years, is a sad picture, but, you know, that is the reality. So I think from a prudent, honest, transparent budget, that's what we've got. And I think everybody, including the Government of National Unity, realize that it's still, you know, a lot of hard work ahead of us to actually turn the economy around. And it's not just having a new government that's going to achieve that.
Martin, how do we turn the economy around?
I think, you know, he did address a lot of the growth initiatives where we can actually get growth going, addressing some of the plans in terms of tackling the structural issues. Bottom line, you know, the economy at this point in time, we keep a lid on the economy given some of these issues. We know them, they're well debated. We're making some progress with Eskom, but there's many others. You know, you can add to the list now the ports, Transnet, the water issue that's building as we speak. And we've, from experience with Eskom, we realize that, you know, you don't turn these things around overnight. So if you take the right policy and implement it today, you're probably only going to see those results a couple of years down the line. But that is really what we need to do. We need to remove the hurdles that's keeping us from growing and focus on those that can actually make South Africa in an export market more competitive.
Martin, when we look at our historical performance as a country, whether it's midterm, whether it's main budget, just the overall performance, a lot has been said around the ability of South Africa to develop policy is sound, it's good, but where we fall short seems to be implementation. How do we get that right? Understanding that there's a new seventh administration, there's a new potential for collaboration. I mean, the minister did stress public and private collaborations and privatization of certain things or private collaborators in certain projects. How do we get implementation right?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think, you know, if you look at our policy, then 95% of that's rock solid from an economic fundamental point of view. Over the last couple of years, it is the lack of implementation. Our president and the Minister of Finance earlier this year said, well, you know, part of the issue is that things don't happen efficiently on, call it, municipal level. So it's one thing for them to table the budget, make sure that there's enough funding and have the policy plans. But when it gets down to sub-department levels and then onto the municipality levels, that's where things really don't get implemented. Now, again, how do we get that right? I think that is where part of the positive sentiment will probably still continue to say, well, hopefully this new government of national unity with some other parties in the mix and just people cross-checking each other can actually assist in taking more responsibility for that implementation. Because in the end, it is about accountability to actually implement that and make sure that we get the results that they are predicting in the budget.
It's about accountability, it's about getting the right things done, and about moving the ship forward. We'll leave it at that, Martin. Thank you so much for the time and for the insights. Martin Ackerman, Chief Economist at Citadel Investment Services, sharing his thoughts on the midterm budget policy statement that was tabled earlier today.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This year, more voters headed to the polls than ever before. This has brought political change to key markets, which will inevitably impact the long-term outlook for global markets more broadly. Tune into the SAFM Market Update this evening at 6:45 as Simon Skidder, Head of Global Investments at Orbis, discusses the changing risk-reward profile of global markets and compelling opportunities for long-term investors. Brought to you by Alan Gray. Long-term investing. Alan Gray is an authorized financial services provider.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
One of the policies we don't seem to miss on is the tax policy. No matter how you slice it, no matter how you look at it, South Africa has got probably one of the most efficient tax systems for the challenges it has to contend with. And that lends itself to many, many different conversations around that and many different perspectives from that perspective. Now, there was a special mention in the midterm budget, a policy statement to my next guest. The special mention was in honor of the efforts that have been put forward by the South African Revenue Services. And I have the pleasure of speaking to the commissioner at SARS, Edward Kiesvetter, around some of the revenue adjustments and the medium-term outlook that was presented by the finance minister. Good evening, commissioner. Lovely to speak to you as always. Last week or so about, we kind of got confirmation from your team that revenue collections have increased by about 3.2% from the previous year. And today the finance minister alluded to the fact that we are now revising down budget estimated revenues. Take us through just the collections up to now and how it's been for SARS.
Thank you. Thank you, Jimmy. And first of all, I think it would be useful for our listeners to know that there's a direct correlation between tax revenue growth and what happens in the economy. And if you have an economy that is weaker than what it was estimated to be, real GDP growing only at 1.1% in the current year, then you would expect to see that manifest in revenue collections. Let me share with you just three areas where this is a marked departure in terms of the assumptions. If you take individual taxes, the assumption in February was that the wage bill would increase 8.4% year on year, whereas the actual increase in the wage bill has only been 5.4%, 3 percentage points lower. Now, you would expect, therefore, if wages are lower, then the taxes on those wages will be lower, and that has resulted in 12 billion rand of shorter collections, which is purely a fact of what's happening in the economy. There was also an assumption that we would add 32,000 jobs in quarter one. That didn't manifest quite at the same level. And then we've also seen a slight uptick in retrenchments, which takes money out of the fund. And so those are the factors around individual taxes. The second big area is fuel levy. And there we have good news and bad news. The good news is we haven't had load shedding for now, well over 250 days. And the reason for that is Eskom is performing better. Therefore, the open cycle gas turbines aren't being used, which means we're not spending as much money on diesel. Many of the individuals and small businesses have replaced their diesel generators with rooftop solar and renewable energy. So we've seen an 11% decline in consumption of fuel, over 1.3 million liters. And that, when the fuel usage goes down, your fuel levy goes down, and that has resulted in 8.4 billion. And then lastly, your trade taxes. The assumption in February was that trade imports would grow by 1.9% year on year, whereas actually we've seen a decline of 3.7%, which is more than 5% downward swing, and that then manifests lower import VAT and lower customs duties, and that has added another 15.7 billion to the shortfall. So collectively, those were the three main taxes, offset marginally by better than expected corporate provisional taxes. And then in the second half of the year, the minister would also have penciled in the contribution from the two-pot withdrawal. We can tell you that as of this morning, over 1.6 million directives have been issued to the value of just over 29 billion rand, against which 7.2 billion will be retained as tax. So a slight improvement based on those two factors, but not enough to offset the losses as a result of individual taxes, fuel levies, and import taxes.
Commissioner, when we look at the impact that this has, obviously we are seeing those lower forecasts and the shortfalls coming through. And as you mentioned, a lot of the expectations that were there might not have been met to the fullest. One of the expectations on the other side of the coin is expenditure. The revenue collection forms just one part of this long equation, and a part of that equation is how that revenue is then to be dispersed. And the minister mentioned in the statement today that lower revenues mean that we cannot accommodate all of the demands on the fiscus. How much of the demands on the fiscus are now going to be increasing the pressure of the work that you have to do from a revenue collection perspective?
Well, so obviously the minister has acknowledged that near-term growth is marginally weaker. There'll be a slight uptick in the outer years. But he has committed himself to the fiscal objective of debt consolidation so that we do not exceed, but we rather stabilize around about the 75.5% of debt to GDP ratio. And so that commitment the minister has given. Now, obviously, what that means is you either have to spend less or you have to borrow more or somewhere in between. And I think setting a debt ceiling and trying to manage debt service costs down is a strategic intent by the minister. I mean, we cannot, if you look at the current expenditure profile, 60 rand in every 100 rand we spend on social wages, and that's necessary because of the vulnerable that is absolutely dependent on social services, whether it's health, education, or just the various grants system that is paid out. That is still necessary. But that means if you then add the 6 rand of every 10 rand for consumption expenditure and 22 cents for debt, it means you only have 18 cents left to invest. And if we don't invest more, our productive capacity doesn't increase. And if our productive capacity doesn't increase, we're not creating factories, we're not creating jobs, therefore our tax base does not increase. So you find yourself in this conundrum, and therefore what the Minister of the Medium Term is saying, we have to change this allocation of 60, 20, 20, and spend more on creating investment in the economy. Otherwise, if we don't have the investment into infrastructure, we will continue to grow and we remain in this negative cycle. So the plan is, and it needs some tough choices in terms of where do you start cutting and holding back. And that's the balance that Treasury is faced with in the short term.
Tough choices are needed, but we need to increase our productive capacity at the same time. Thank you so much, Commissioner, for those insights and for the time. That's Commissioner of the South African Revenue Services, Edward Kiesvetter, joining me to share his thoughts on the midterm budget policy statement that was delivered this afternoon.
What will you leave behind one day? Whether you're building a life for your children, building an empire, or both, your future starts with the right investment partner. 91, investing for a world of change. 91 is an authorized FSP.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This interview is brought to you by S&G Grant Thornton Tax Advisory Services. As I said earlier on, we have the privilege of having the Director and Head of Tax Advisory Services from S&G Grant Thornton, Kanyisa Cingo Ngandu, in studio with us to discuss the breakdown of the midterm budget policy statement. Kanyisa, when we started, we kind of got initial thoughts and expectations out of the way, and you've been listening in on some of the reactions from various parties, including most recently the Commissioner at the South African Revenue Services. And for me, when I was listening to the speech being delivered, 22 cents on the rand goes to debt servicing costs. That's a scary number.
That is a scary.
It was scary in February. It's even scarier now.
Scarier now. Yeah.
How do we even begin to grapple with a 6 trillion rand debt level that puts us at 75.5% debt to GDP, and that from whether we're looking at it from a debt ceiling perspective, from a tax perspective, however you want to cut up that number, it's a significant number that's hampering South Africa's ability to actually grow.
It is a significant number. I think what's often missing when we're talking about the debt to GDP ratio is what was that money used for? When can we expect a return on investment to deal exactly with some of the issues that both the minister and the SARS commissioner touched on, that we need the economy to grow?
And that's something you and I spoke about, Kanye, before we were on air, around the fact that we have kind of expectations, and for some people we shouldn't have expectations. You should moderate those expectations, and that's kind of been the response, right, from a lot of the analysts. A lot of the sentiment around it was, it was a tight budget. We appreciate that, but it could have been better. It could have had a little more something to it. And when you sit from a tax perspective, historically, we've never expected any tax announcements. We've never expected anything outstanding or outrageous to come out of the MTBPS. But what we're also not expecting is lower revenue collections. We're not expecting that shortfall that the SARS commissioner just alluded to.
So, I mean, if the economy hasn't grown, that there usually will be a shortfall in revenue collections. What scares me, though, is in the recent past, when recent years, every time when there's a shortfall in revenue collections because the economy did not grow, the laborers or the people that get the wage suffer because a couple of years back, what we would have is during the February budget speech, we would have the tables, the brackets being adjusted to take into account inflation. But since the economy has not been growing at the right levels, then what we get is either just a small adjustment or no adjustment at all, which essentially means then individuals are paying more tax because the minister, or was it the commissioner who touched, commissioner touched on the wage grew by lower than expected by 5%. So then you have people that from the last cycle are paying tax at their old inflationary rates. Their wages for the current period did not grow. They grew by 5%, not as high as the assumptions for the revenue collections had stipulated. So I think that that is a concern, that then next year, the pressure that everyone is talking about, should we be concerned or should individuals be concerned that if you make money through and you earn a wage, should you be worried now that you will be expected to pay more taxes because there's a shortfall in the revenue collection?
And that was something the minister alluded to, saying there will be serious implications come the budget. And you and I touched on that briefly a little earlier to say that what are those implications? What do they look like? And historically, we've always seen the default is to say, okay, we just increase taxes, right? We did it with corporate tax. We did it with VAT. Why not do it? We at some point, we did it with personal income tax as well, when the tax brackets were moved around and everything. So historically, that's kind of been the approach, to just say that. But obviously, with a shrinking tax base, that becomes unsustainable. You get to a point where you cross a Rubicon. It no longer makes sense to still be increasing taxes. And this time, for the first time, the minister saying we are moving from consumption to capital investment. How does that positively set us up to potentially collect more taxes, to widen the tax base, to improve the current situation?
That takes us back to the conversation we had off here, right? Where I was saying a lot of the conversations talk about us moving back to a state of great years. But that state, even in that state, a lot of people were not working. A lot of people were not part of the, we still had the same complaints that we have too few taxpayers. If we're talking about personal income tax, of course, not counting VAT, because everyone pays VAT. Whatever the current plan that we are on is going to take us, even if we grow really well, it's going to take us to a state where many that are in the middle class will enjoy their lives a little bit. But it does not necessarily unlock or add more to the middle class or add more people who are working who then pay more taxes. I think on the comment on the potential increase in taxes, the government has not increase corporate income tax because business is better organized. So business has people like myself and other people from other that would generally submit comments, and they will push against any potential increase in corporate income tax because it is seen as you have an economy now that is not growing, you need to attract investments, you need to look at where the average tax rate is from an OECD perspective or from a global perspective. So you can't go beyond that. The person that always suffers in South Africa where there is poor revenue collections would be individuals, and not wealthy individuals. It would be middle class, people who work for a wage, because wealthy people, your tax is fixed at 20%. I think part of that as well, I mean, if you're looking at dividends, your returns are generally taxed at a lower rate. And another part of it is wealthy people are better organized. Mm-hmm. But from a middle class person, we not as organized. So when government needs additional revenue, then they target the middle class. So either they will adjust upwards, or they will say we won't adjust for inflation, which I think the last cycle was celebrated. But essentially what that meant was we were all paying more tax.
You mentioned something quite important, saying that those that are impacted the most and those that suffer the most for these decisions are not the bigger businesses, not the municipalities, but the individuals on the lower end of the spectrum. And I found it interesting in the speech that the minister delivered today, he said on the matter of the municipal debt relief that was for Eskom.
He
said, we implore provincial and national departments owing municipalities to pay their dues. Now, when I listened to that being said, I thought that could have been an opportunity for the minister to take a harder stance on municipalities that have not been paying their debts. Because the reality is that becomes our problem as citizens when the state has to take on Eskom's debt balance and debt book onto their own balance sheet. That is a big problem from that perspective, because it might lead to more borrowing, which might lead to more interest on borrowings, which repeats the cycle. But shouldn't that have been an opportunity for the minister to come out with a bit of a firmer hand towards the municipalities that are not abiding by this relief that they were so desperate for?
What could have been even better is if he said, this is what we are doing about the municipalities that are not. So not talk about what can be done, that will be tougher. But it's all government, like it's local government. They owe another state-owned entity. So there should be a better way of resolving whatever the challenge is. If the current plan is not working, what is the best solution that, like you say, does not end up resulting in a situation where then those who work for their money, the laborers, must pay additional tax because government is not managing government affairs between local and state-owned entities.
Government must pay government for the services government rendered to government.
To government, yes. So that.
It all gets very technical somewhere along the line. Yeah. Kanye, I want to look at one of the last aspects. In fact, the last point that the minister spoke about before ending off the midterm budget policy statement. And I suppose there was no way of getting through the conversation and such a big speech for this time of the year without discussing the grey listing, the elephant in the room, the catalyst to solving a lot of the problems. The grey listing, we've addressed now 16 out of the 22 actions, and you and I were touching on briefly about the fact that the state has outlined priorities, but are they prioritizing the priorities?
It doesn't sound like it. I think because every time when the minister is speaking to us, whether it's during the midterm or during the main budget, we're still working on it. We're still working on it. It's a work in progress. So I think that doesn't sound like it really is a priority, but it may very well be. But there are other challenges. But I think if we are where we are now and we need that resolved, it should be resolved. It should be prioritized and it should be out of the way. And we face with different challenges because I think even before the grey listing, we had other challenges in the economy. So that's not the only challenge. Even if that's resolved, you will still have some of the challenges that may mean we're not growing at the right rate.
Kanye, what are your overall thoughts and your overall assessment of the budget? If you had to rate the budget 1 out of 10, I kind of have my rating and I'll share my rating after I get yours. What is your overall just one number and why that number?
Okay. I will say it's a 10. I will tell you why. I know it doesn't match. I will tell you why.
Out of 10.
Because remember, I said I didn't have high expectations.
That's fair.
So from my understanding of the government's policy and what SARS is doing, everything is aligned. The government has been talking about Operation Vulindlela. That's what they've done. We know the economy hasn't grown. So he couldn't go there and say the economy has grown. That would have been now a one. So he said the economy hasn't grown. He said we're revising it downwards. That is exactly what it is. And we're talking now that government says we have these priorities. We want to address A, B, C, and D. But they haven't addressed it for the past 4 years. So I wasn't expecting now that this round he's going to say, now we've addressed this. So I wasn't surprised. So that's why I'm saying for me, given government's policy, given the history and how we got to where we are, it makes sense that you've got a government minister saying we have a problem with local government. And that is not something that we should necessarily cheer for, because that should be resolved, because that is a problem. So that's why I'm saying for me, it's a 10 out of 10. It is what I expected. And I have a lot of respect for the people at National Treasury, a lot of respect for the people at SARS. They have done what they can. I think SARS has been pushing a lot harder on enforcement, because if you're not collecting revenue from true economic growth and you're not changing tax laws to have additional taxes, then the other way is just be a bit tough on the enforcement end. So I think there as well, they're doing a great job. You have a lot of people who have additional tax bills. Some of them are not necessarily fair, but that is what they have. And I think the automation they've done at SARS, they're able to put together a lot of information. We've seen a lot of cases where people have money coming into one bank account, and SARS picks it up from that one bank account, and you transfer that money to your own other bank account. And then SARS assesses you on the other money that is coming through the other bank account as though it's new revenue. So you can see that they are doing all they can to close the gap, to bridge the gap. And they're doing a great job trying to collect revenues. But the problem is not the actual collection of revenues. The problem is, do we have the right environment for growth? Do we have the right systems for growth? When the minister, when everyone is talking about, are we investing in factories? What does a factory require in today's climate? What are other countries doing? And do we, when we're investing in factories, are we talking about investing in the right factories so that we can do away with the problem? And where are those factories going to be? Are they going to be in Sikisiki, for example, where I'm from? Are they going to be in Joburg or in P? Are they addressing issues of people who used to work now have not worked? What about people who haven't worked the past 20 years? So I think there's a... I was not expecting that from the medium term we would get answers to the broader challenges that we need resolved for us to have a South Africa that works for everyone. Those who are making money and want to make more money are making a lot more money. And those who currently are not making money are also making money, which just works for everyone.
That certainly changes my perspective on it, because we spoke about this and I said that I felt like it was a bit of a flat budget, but perhaps, just maybe, I had my expectations a little too high, and maybe that's why I felt that it disappointed ever so slightly. But thank you so much, Kanyisa, for joining me. That was Kanyisa Qingongandu, who is the Director and Head for Tax Advisory Services at SNG Grant Thornton, joining us to reflect on the budget speech, share her thoughts around the budget speech, and give her overall view on how the budget or the midterm budget policy statement was delivered. This interview was brought to you by SNG Grant Thornton Tax Advisory Services.
Computex, your automated tax calculator. Experience seamless tax management with Computex, an advanced calculator for effortless current and deferred tax calculations. Integrated with tax legislation and IAS 12, it's perfect for all businesses. Acting as a smart AI companion with self-learning capabilities for accurate tax treatment. Boost your tax team's productivity with Computex. Efficiency redefined. Sign up now for a free 15-day trial by emailing tax.info@sng.gt.com.
Ready to take control of your financial future? Moneyversity Plus is your go-to streaming edutainment platform for all ages. With fun, engaging content and downloads for kids ages 6 to 17 and practical lessons for adults of all ages, Moneyversity Plus makes learning about money easy and exciting for everyone in the family. Plus, as you learn, you can earn Old Mutual Rewards points, a win for your wallet and a win for your future. Whether it's mastering money basics or planning your financial goals, Moneyversity has you covered. Start streaming today and join thousands of others at moneyversity.co.za, your plus one for financial wisdom.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This segment is brought to you by Alan Gray, 50 years of long-term investing. Alan Gray is an authorized financial services provider. With the US elections less than a week away, it pretty much brings to a close a very eventful year that has been the impact of political movements on global markets. We've had more than 50% of the world's GDP going to the polls this year alone, in one of the most historic election years that we've seen in history. And with all these changes and with all the adjustments that are happening in the political landscape, one has to wonder how those changes filter into the markets, into market decisions, and into investor sentiment. I'm joined on the line by Simon Skinner, who is the head of the the global investment team at Allan Gray's offshore partner Orbis to take a look at this and see if we can unpack this a little bit more. Good evening, Simon. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start by taking a look at the markets and how the risk profile within markets has changed in this election year. I imagine this is the first time we've seen this many countries go towards the polls, and there have been leadership changes, but more than that, there have been policy changes and sentiment changes.
Yeah, good evening, and thanks for having me on. Look, I think you're right. I think there is a lot of things up in the air in the world at the moment, probably more so than many of the years we've experienced, you know, over the last decade. And yet the market seems to have taken much of this in its stride. If you look at what's happened to global stock markets this year, the performance has been unusually strong. So, you know, the benchmark might be up kind of close to 20%, which would be an extraordinary return, given that we haven't had a kind of market crash anytime in recent history. And, you know, if you look at the way the market is thinking about risk at the moment, you know, a lot of things seem to be taken in its stride. Let's say people are quite sanguine about a lot of the direction things could go in. And so actually, when we think about where the risks are they to the upside or the downside from here, we'd probably be a bit more cautious than the average market participant.
Simon, when we look at those risks, what are some of the implications of those risks for investors? I mean, as a portfolio management team, as Orbis, as Allan Gray, you guys see risk in one way. But as investors as well, there's a different outlook towards how the risk affects portfolios, how it affects decision-making within those portfolios. What are some of these possible impacts or implications of risk on investors?
So I think we need to be clear about what we're talking about when we talk about risk. At Orbis, we think the only real risk that investors should be concerned with is the risk of impairing your capital. So that, you know, over the long term, the real value of your hard-earned dollars, your hard-saved dollars, declines. That's the risk we're really thinking about. So we don't get involved in trying to think about the risk of any specific macro event or political events. It's really about what do the valuations of the securities we're invested in imply in terms of the future? And do we think that there is a sufficient discount to the value that we're paying today for those securities to shield us from the risk of losing the real capital, the real value of our capital over time? And so when we look at the market today, we see that the valuations of the overall market are extremely rich. So if you look at the global stock market, we look at a number of indicators which suggest that the markets are priced at about its 90th percentile versus history. That means that only about 10% of the time is the market more cheaply priced. And so if you think about where market valuations might go from here over the long term, it's much more likely to be down than up. And so that creates a risk for us. And so we want to be very mindful of the overall level of valuations in the market when we're thinking about how to select securities for our clients and how to position our portfolios. And I think investors with us and with other managers should be mindful that this is an unusually risk-tolerant environment, which does create some potentially negative scenarios in the future for those with a long-term horizon.
Simon, are you saying that there are some markets globally that you might be feeling might have stretched valuations that might have run a little too hot, and that has you concerned when looking at what the future could potentially hold?
That's exactly what I'm saying. I wouldn't say there are some markets. There are many markets that look like that. And so, you know, we try to be students of history, and we try to take a long lens when looking back and understanding what the future may hold. We can see that valuations are normally much lower than they are today. For across a wide range of securities in a wide range of markets.
We try to be students of history. We try to learn from the past to move us forward. We'll leave it at that. Simon, thanks so much for the time. Simon Skinner, head of global investments at Orbis, joining us to take a look at the global market environment and the risk that's associated with that.
This segment was brought to you by Allan Gray, 50 years of long-term investing. Allan Gray is an authorized financial services provider.
We've come to the end of the show. Thank you, folks, for tuning in, for sticking with us throughout the afternoon. We trust that the midterm budget policy statement breakdown was comprehensive. There's obviously still lots to look forward to for the rest of the year and for the economic landscape of South Africa. For now, we take the midterm budget policy statement as it was delivered in a positive light and hope we can move forward from here. It's just gone 7 o'clock. Greg Coast is standing by with the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abrams and the top sport team. From my side, good night.